Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Jeff Mahoney, who's general counsel of the Council of Institutional Investors, talking about Rule 10b5-1 plans. They've been in the news, particularly the Wall Street Journal, quite a bit. I've been blogging about that. And CII has been active in a push for rulemaking or interpretive guidance regarding these plans. So the first question for you, Jeff, is what have you been doing via the SEC on the plans?
Well, Brock, the council's had a long-standing membership-approved policy governing executive stock sales initiated through Rule 10b5-1 trading plans. That policy was established in light of concerns raised by many commentators about potential abuses of Rule 10b5-1 at the time the SEC issued the rule way back in the year 2000. Our initial policy provided that executives utilizing Rule 10b5-1 trading plans should provide a minimum of 30 days advance notice of any stock sales. That provision was an effort to establish some best practices in this area, an effort to limit potential abuses of Rule 10b5-1 by prohibiting immediate unannounced sales by company insiders through those trading plans. Our policy was then significantly expanded in 2008 to provide for greater transparency and board oversight of Rule 10b5-1 trading plans. That 2008 revision was in response to concerns raised by the then director of the SEC's Division of Enforcement about some potential abuses of the rule that they had seen. Those concerns also arose in part from a study by a Stanford University professor finding through his review of Rule 10b5-1 trades that trades that were made under Rule 10b5-1 by insiders were far more lucrative than similar trades executed by coworkers outside of the ambit of Rule 10b5-1. So that fast forward to late this past year, the council issued a letter on December 28th of last year to the SEC. That letter was prompted by the Wall Street Journal's reporting last November of their analysis of thousands of Rule 10b5-1 trades that have been executed over the last several years. That analysis found, not unlike the findings of the 2007 study by the Stanford professor I mentioned earlier, the Wall Street Journal analysis found that executives utilizing Rule 10b5-1 trading plans recorded average stock gains of 10% within a week after their trades, which was more than double the gains obtained by those who traded the same stock outside of the Rule 10b5-1 plans. In addition, we discussed the Wall Street Journal's analysis with leading corporate securities lawyers, and they indicated that they were not at all surprised by the results of the analysis because they were seeing a number of practices that, in their view, were inconsistent with the intent, if not the language, Rule 10b5-1. So given the Wall Street Journal work and analysis and what we were hearing from some of the top corporate securities lawyers in the country, we decided to issue that December letter. In that letter, we requested the SEC consider pursuing interpretive guidance or amendments to Rule 10b5-1 that would require that those plans adopt six protocols or guidelines, which we believed per review of our existing policies and per discussion with Corporate Securities Counsel, we believed our six protocols and guidelines would address many of the abuses that have been identified in current practice. Our second letter, issued earlier this month, was prompted by two events. First, April 24th Wall Street Journal article described a number of instances in which company directors who also operated investment firms were establishing Rule 10b5-1 trading plans so that their firms could use the plans as vehicles to pursue what often ended up being rather opaque, opportunistic trades in company stock. This new category of potential abuses of Rule 10b5-1 was described by the spokesperson for the SEC as a, quote, exotic permutation, unquote, that was clearly not contemplated when Rule 10b-5-1 was established. The second event that prompted our recent letter in May was simply the fact that we had a new chairman over at the SEC since the issuance of our December letter, and we thought it was appropriate to raise the issue directly with the new chairman.
Yeah, that makes sense. So have you been hearing from, you know, I know you had your conference recently, and I was there. It was a great conference. What have you been hearing from investors about your activities?
Well, you may have saw, we did have a session related to regulatory reform issues in which this issue was discussed. In addition, we had some face-to-face meetings recently with SEC commissioners in which we raised the issue. So we are hearing from members that they're concerned about these potential abuses. And it's not surprising given that we've had a membership-approved policy in place for many years and that as I indicated earlier, that because of abuses at the time, we substantially revised that policy in 2008. Unfortunately, it doesn't appear that the best practices that we have suggested in our policies have been adopted by those using Rule 10b-5-1 plans, given the Wall Street Journal analysis and the other anecdotal evidence that we've heard from leading corporate securities lawyers about where current practice stands.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see where we go from here. It's hard to tell sometimes. I was very shocked at what happened with stock option backdating for a few years. I didn't think there was anything to it, and then I ended up being wrong.
We've had a number of studies that are showing outsized gains and avoidance of significant losses by those who are making trades under Rule 10b-5-1 that just don't seem to make any sense without the use of material public information.
Well, thanks for your time, Jeff, and we'll have to see what happens.
Thank you.
Thanks.